Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Crystal Blair, Roz Brown, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up later this week, on Sunday, February 23rd, Imagine Black is partnering with the Hollywood Theater for a screening of Beyond Walls, a story of solidarity and justice. It's a part of their Reimagining Public Safety project, and here to talk with me about it is Joy Elise Davis, the Executive Director of Imagine Black. Welcome to KBOO News in Depth.
Oh my goodness, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about this upcoming film screening and the work that your organization has been doing. So let's start there. What is the kind of the overarching thing here, the Reimagining Public Safety project?
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about this project. It really started back in 2020 during the resistance, and a few black leaders came together, and we were trying to figure out how do we sustain this movement long term? How do we continue to talk about public safety? What we recognized is that for a few folks, they got triggered when they heard the word abolition or defund, and they actually didn't know what that meant. So what we came together, we designed this project, and what would it look like to do some public education, to vision together, to really learn about what these terms mean, but also grounded in the reality of Oregon and talk about what it would look like if Oregon loved Black people. Like, what would that look like? What would our public safety system look like? And we've been working the last few years to kind of build out this project and excited for this moment.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you're talking about public education? Like, what does that look like in the past? I know you did some interviews with city council candidates as part of it.
Yeah, I would love to talk about it. So we spent a lot of time with actually folks who are currently incarcerated. We partnered with Portland State University's Black Studies Department, and they worked with folks, particularly at the Oregon State Penitentiary. There's a great group of Black men from a group called Arusa Sasa who meet regularly and talk about this work. And so we spent some time with them. We actually had a beautiful art exhibit with some poetry and essays that that they came together with a few weeks back. We also, just as an organization, we care about talking about public safety. So we spend a lot of time in how we endorse candidates, how we talk about elections, how we do civic engagement work to really center folks who are most impacted by this issue. So yeah, we have a lot of different ways of getting involved.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, like, when you're talking about, you know, structuring the kind of discussion that you want to have and bringing that forward to people, how do you go about that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really important to folks first recognize that a lot of us, a majority of us, have like a public safety story. We think about public safety sometimes in a very narrow way, but access to housing is public safety. Access to like food justice, making sure that you have safe spaces to take care of yourself. I'm thinking about harm reduction. I'm thinking about mental health. All of these things contribute to public safety. I think it's really important for folks to know that even if you're not incarcerated, you're impacted by our system, both from a financial, from taxes, but also as the loss that we experience as a community when someone is thrown away, essentially, and we hide the key. So we're really interested in really having folks come together and first recognizing the impact of this work, both the prison system and the policing system. And then we try to go through a process where we learn together. We read some books together. We spend some time really diving into the blueprints and different community leaders and academics and community members who've been talking about this work for decades, for years and years. And then we vision. We come together and we talk about what would it look like if we changed our system. You know, like Oregon was designed, our systems were designed by some folks, probably not folks who look like us. And we have the power to redesign that collectively. So really thinking about how do we use imagination to redesign our systems.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as this project has gone on, what has the response been like from folks as you're engaging with different people?
Yeah, you know, it ranges. I think for a lot of folks, they realize they never had a safer space to wrestle with these ideas. So they may have read something really quickly with the amount of misinformation we have floating through the internet. They actually don't know a lot. So some of it is just excitement to actually wrestle with this. Having a safer space to ask questions without judgment is really nice. We also live, you know, in Oregon. So we actually have had some hate, too, of some folks really being upset about the things that we're doing and not really wanting to hold space for us to come together collectively. So it ranges. But I like to focus on the folks who are open and interested in trying something new and really just trying to build community across difference.
I mean, you've been doing this now. I mean, the work is long, but the specific project, right, about 5 years now, has the response changed over time that you've noticed? Is there like different things that have emerged in that time?
Yeah, you know, I think what was really important for us to be very intentional over the last few years. So we focused on really small engagement, if I'm quite honest. We focused on spaces that we can be safe. We focused on talking to folks who are most impacted. This is actually the first time we're actually talking about the work publicly. And there's both excitement with that, but also there's a little bit of fear with that. I think the moment is now where folks are ready to dive deeper. And we're excited to invite folks to come with us and along on this journey and yeah, try something different.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's go into this event that's coming up then. The film, Beyond Walls, A Story of Solidarity and Justice. Tell me about, you know, why screen this film?
Yeah, so there is a great organization called Working Films, and they work with different artists to do these beautiful documentaries, these powerful spaces of resistance. And what I like about this film in particular, it's not just about the moment in terms of despair. You know, it's a heavy topic. When we talk about folks being locked in a system where essentially they're being tortured, when we talk about the family members who are impacted by that, that's heavy work. What I enjoy about this film, it also doesn't leave you in that space of despair. It talks about what we can do, what are the actions we can take, how do we actually move past this moment. I'm really excited to partner with Working Films in Hollywood Theater. I love me some Hollywood Theater, so it's going to be really nice to be in community with like-minded folks to just talk about this film. So we're going to watch it first, and we're going to have a public panel, which I think is going to be really nice.
Yeah, well, tell me about the speaker panel that's going to be a part of that. What can folks expect?
Yeah, you know, I think they're going to expect some vulnerability. You know, we have different folks who interact with the system very very differently. We have someone who is formerly incarcerated joining us. We have someone who is a professor who's been working in some of our state prisons for a few years and have interacted with folks. And then you have someone who works in policy. So we're going to have a conversation about how this film impacts us both personally, but also the systems, and really having it be an example of an opportunity for us to resist together and build something new.
Mm-hmm. So with this screening being a part of the Reimagining Public Safety project, like, where is that on the trajectory of where Imagine Black is going with this project?
Yeah, you know, we love to vision. I mean, not surprising. Imagine is our name. We like this concept of coming together and dreaming up a new way of being and using all the tools in our toolbox. So if I had it my way, after we got done with this beautiful visioning, we would talk about the policy work we want to do afterwards. We would build a campaign, a coalition. We'd also just build a base of people who are ready to advocate together. You know that this work requires many different hands and perspectives and folks that come to the table collectively. So I'm excited to kind of just build a strong organizing base where we're going to talk about this at the state level. We're going to talk about this locally. We're going to build some projects that I think are going to be really sustaining and thinking about what it looks like to do public safety holistically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, in this work and in this call for police and prison abolition, and I asked you about this a little bit, but do you see that there are things that get in the way of people being able to imagine a kind of future without those things?
Yeah, you know, I think there's, I mentioned before, just a lot of misinformation. I know a lot of us grew up watching quite a lot of cop shows and detective shows.
They're all over.
They're everywhere. And I think we also just don't understand the entertainment pieces of it and what's reality. You know, some of us have friends and family members who are police officers or detectives, and it's not like how it is on TV. There are things that they're actually really unqualified to take on. That's something that they're not experienced with, you know. So I think it's really important for us to...
Is there an example that comes to mind?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I'm an abolitionist. Baby abolitionist is how I define myself, still learning and growing. You know, I have many family members who are police officers who walked into the space, you know, as Black folks and wanting to make a change, and got really thrown into this fraternity where they lose a part of their humanity, if I'm quite honest. If you talk to folks like my dad, I would say very clearly he is not qualified to show up when it comes to sometimes even domestic violence. When you come in with assuming everyone is a criminal and need to be punished, when you don't show up with care, I think a great example is our Portland Street Response. When you show up with care, you know, there's so much data that shows that when you have social workers, when you have folks who are mental health professionals responding to a mental health crisis, like, lives are saved. I'm someone who had a lot of domestic violence growing up, and I can't imagine what it would look like if actually a social worker showed up instead of a cop, when someone actually checked in to see how I was doing, how my mother was doing. I think that would have changed how we interact. So I think the reality is that we build our police system up to assume everyone is out to get them. We assume they lead with force. And I would like to see us lead with more care and understanding. And I'm not naive. There are some things that, you know, we need public safety officers to show up to, but they don't need to show up with force when someone does graffiti, or when someone steals a shopping cart, or when someone is trying to figure out how to feed themselves. Like, there's a sense of humanity that I think we need to think about when we think about public safety.
Yeah, the mismatch is clear on a lot of those things. And I mean, I guess with Portland Street Response, like, there has been some strides in Portland in particular towards that. And I think you could even look at the most recent election as, you know, maybe more of an endorsement of street response, yeah, compared to some of the rhetoric that had been out there around it prior to.
For sure.
I'm curious if there are, like, other kind of myth-busting things that come to mind for you about talking about police and prison abolition.
Yeah, you know, I think there is this myth that, and again, I'm harping a lot on a police system, but I recognize, like, there's so many systems that uplift this work. But I think we often think that, how to say this, the safest communities have the most resources. Let's be honest. When you go into spaces where they have access to housing, shelter, food, when they know if they make a mistake that someone's actually going to walk them home and maybe tell their guardian or parent instead of locking them up, like, when someone is having a mental health crisis or dealing with addiction, they're met with care. Like, I don't always look to kind of elite communities as faces I want to always emulate, but I do think it's important to recognize that there's so much more to public safety than just a police officer in prisons. You know, I want to think about how do we prevent crime? And the reality is, police officers show up after the crime happens. So how do we actually prevent this? What are the systems we need to change? I mentioned food, I mentioned housing, I mentioned all of these health things that I think help us prevent crime. I think another myth right now that I will say is that theft, that people are stealing cars, that's the biggest theft. That's actually not. Wage theft is actually it is the biggest theft that we have in this country. Folks are stealing our wages. Like, yet we don't do anything about it. We slap them on their wrist. We say, oh, you know, sometimes we bail them out. But also, if someone's trying to figure out how to feed themselves, they go to jail for years. Like, how are we reconciling that? So I would like to see our system, our public safety system, really be appropriate to the loss, and also not equate the loss of property to people. You know, like, we can rebuild things. Unfortunately, we can't rebuild people. So how do we actually value humans more than we value, I don't know, a building, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. If our listeners are interested in learning more about the Reimagining Public Safety Project or Imagine Black more generally, this screening, what's the best way for them to do that? How do you want people to engage?
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of us are reassessing our relationships with some of these big social media sites. So I have to mention, you know, we launched our own social media app last year called the Black Possibilities. It's not just for Black folks. It's for Oregonians who are interested in coming together and having a safer space to talk about it. We know the safe space is constantly negotiated, but we also need to actually wrestle with some things together without fear that we're going to be trolled or that someone's coming to harm. Like, how do we actually cultivate the safer space? So I think if you're an app person like me, to please, like, download, go to your app store, Black Possibilities app, but also our website. Our website, imagineblack.org, is the best place also to find more information. We're still on the socials, but we prefer those two methods.
Fair enough. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Anything else?
You know, I'm just really excited to be in community with folks in this moment. And I hope that folks who are interested in just learning together and growing and being open to hearing different things, you know, if you're triggered by the word defund or reform and abolition, I challenge you to just take some time to learn about what that means and really get all the facts before you make a quick decision about whether or not you align.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for stopping by KBOO News in Depth. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've been speaking with Joy Elise Davis, the executive director of Imagine Black. Imagine Black is partnering with the Hollywood Theater to screen Beyond Walls, a story of solidarity and justice, as a part of their Reimagining Public Safety project. That screening is on Sunday, February 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. I'm Althea Billings for KBOO News in Depth. Stay tuned for more after this.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I am joined by Laura Grimes, the executive director of Oregon Arts Watch, to talk about some recent stories from the publication. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Althea.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Lots of interesting arts news to get people updated on. I want to start with something that's happening in Portland. There's a story in Oregon Arts Watch right now called Modeling Portland's Past and Future. The City of Possibility Architectural Models Exhibit and a series of public talks celebrate civic progress and aspire to build momentum to a, quote, renaissance within our reach. Talk to me about this story.
Brian Libby wrote this story about this whole effort, an exhibit and a series of talks called The City of Possibility. And this just feels like a real moment, you know, a big moment full of possibility where the whole design community can come together. And the design community, meaning, you know, architects, city planners, urban designers, and everybody who thinks about how a city works. And this really is an opportunity for everybody to come together and have that sort of fruitful dialogue and back and forth and see each other's work. So everybody's just not working in silos, but really comes together. This whole project was conceived by Randy Gregg, who is a longtime architecture writer, curator here in town, and an architect and University of Oregon professor, William Smith. There's an exhibit of models of buildings downtown. It's in two different buildings downtown. And then there's this series of talks. And what I love about it is one is that there's a quote from William Smith, the professor at the University of Oregon, who helped to curate this whole endeavor. And he talks about how there's the double work that models can do. They're both miniature, so it's something that you can look at and envision, but it's also something that can be emulated. And he says in the story, we're playing with the versions of the city perhaps, but we're also dreaming really big about what the city could become in the next few years. And it's true. It's like these are sort of a way where models are a way where you can visualize the city. They're an instant way to communicate, but then you can also really see how it comes together. And there's lots of conversations that are going on, the exhibit, and these talks are happening through March 27th. And the talks are anywhere from, you know, how city streets are used to how the Portland waterfront is used. There are a variety of different conversations. So the idea is not just how a city looks, how it's built, but it's actually thinking about how a city is used. How do people use it? It's not, the city is made up of its people. So it's important that it is livable, that we can traverse it easily with transportation, that it's all about our quality of life. How do we use the spaces? How do we interact? Are there places where we can gather? Is it fun and interesting to look at? It's all about livability. So there, in one part of it, Mike Thielen is a food culture writer, and he talks about how to regain the positive reputation of the city, which has taken some dings in recent years, that it really kind of needs to go beyond the comments in the press and the social media, and it needs to come from managing growth smartly and considering the quality of life of the city. So I find that this is an interesting project so that we can envision a vibrant city and how it can all come together. I'm kind of hoping that this way of elevating the discourse around how a city works and looks and feels and how it grows responsibly could be something that we do more regularly in the future. I'm hoping that this isn't just a one-time event.
I think it's interesting that the exhibit includes all of these models that ended up being how the city is now, but also unused models that were part of what people were imagining at different points in, you know, working in urban design and developing in Portland. It's also things that didn't totally come to fruition.
I found that interesting, too. In fact, I think there's like a photo in the story of the design for the Portland building that was not selected. There were three different options, and I couldn't help but think, ooh, I had no idea that was a possibility, which is kind of interesting. I was curious about that. It also talks about models, like one of the models on display was like the patterns for police surveillance flights or something, and I thought I had no idea. It's just all the ways that a city comes together. It's really about the people. So how can we make a city livable and vibrant, and how can we imagine its future as being a place where we want to live?
And sometimes you got to get off the ground level to see all of that. Well, I have another story here that I would love to ask you about. This one is from D. Moore, and it's called Oregon Legislature's Arts Caucus Rolls Out Its Five-Bill Agenda for the Current Session. Bills announced at a Salem gathering range from increased funding to cultural construction projects to a merger of two state cultural agencies and a crackdown on ticket scalping. So this is looking at, of course, the legislature and what is in front of them when it comes to the arts. Can you talk me through some of the bills that are being considered?
There was a big kickoff event February 12th in Salem that featured a number of notable performing artists, and it focuses on the legislation that will be presented during this legislative session. And these will be bills that benefit and provide funding for arts and culture programs across the state. The caucus, it's called the Oregon Legislature's Arts and Culture Caucus, is made up of 27 members. It's bipartisan with Republicans and Democrats. They introduced five House bills. They didn't introduce the bills, but they presented the five bills that will hopefully that they will champion and snake through the legislative process this season. We'll see if how many come to fruition. The five are, one will be to merge the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust, which we've talked about previously. And there, this really isn't a money matter. So I would hope that it's not controversial. It means more ways to streamline our government. So I'm hoping that that is popular. Another bill is to curtail electronic ticket scalping. One will be a reduction of the tax rate for owners of historic buildings so that they can put that money into renovations more easily. It costs a lot more to maintain historic buildings. One other bill would be more funding for the Oregon Arts Commission, which would be more grant money to spend around the state. And the reason behind that is that money has not increased for years. I mean, we are like number 38 in the nation for our state government spending on the arts, even though we're like number one for individual spending. So it really, our state government spending has not kept up with the pace of the growth of the arts and cultural community. So I'm hoping that comes to pass. And the last bill will be about capital funding. So it kind of highlights all the various construction, renovation projects that are happening around the state that need funding to be able to progress. I also wanted to mention that the story talks about federal funding, which has been on everybody's mind. There's been just so much volatility around that. There's federal funding that has been frozen, then unfrozen. Everybody's kind of uncertain. People have lost jobs. It all made me take stock of how much we rely on federal funds, and because I just kind of wanted to know what was at stake, and I examined how much the state distributes in federal funds. And really, the Oregon Arts Commission receives federal funding and disperses it out across the state, and it makes up about a third of their budget, or about $1 million a year. It's like $1.1 million. But the arts and culture community is supported by state grants from both the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. And if you combine those two budgets, federal dollars make up only 10% of their total revenue. So it's still a chunk of change, but it's not such a burden that, I'm sure it really does affect some groups, especially if they have particular projects. And I know of some groups that have had money expected from the National Endowment for the Arts. Capella Romana was one that we documented. Their money was frozen. They had an immediate concert that they were going to put on soon. They were counting on that money. They turned to supporters who raised funds, and then that money was unfrozen. So it takes so much time and energy to deal with this kind of issue. So fortunately, that was resolved, and I'm hoping that other organizations are weathering it okay. But in terms of what we get entirely just as it goes through the state, it amounts to 10% of the whole state money that is dispersed.
That's good to know. It's definitely a time when a lot of different organizations are checking the books to see what they can still count on.
Definitely checked out our books. how much federal funds do we rely on, and so what is that? What's at stake there? So I'm hoping that other groups do the same, which is one reason why I'm raising that issue. It's a time to rethink all of that.
There is one other story from Oregon Arts Watch I want to touch on. This is from the Oregon Cultural Hubs series, and it's called North County Recreation District, From a Pool to Plays, Nehalem's Hub Serves Coastal Community. What can you tell me about this story?
This North County Recreation District in Nehalem was a place that I had never heard about, so I loved this story. I loved how it kind of told me the history about this place and the community that it serves and how it's grown over the years. It's a real heartwarming story. This North County Recreation District, which is also called NCRD, is celebrating its 30th anniversary this spring. It was originally built in 1920 as an elementary school. It was designed by renowned Portland architect A.E. Doyle. And it's notable in that the Halem has a population of 270 people. But this district, this recreation district, this community hub building also serves the nearby towns of Manzanita and Wheeler. It has a 192-seat performing arts center. It has an art gallery. It has a fitness class. It has ball-playing fields and courts. And then opening this year will be a $16.4 million aquatic center. So it's a big deal. And it's notable in that the whole place started as a pool about 100 years ago. And it started tragically because two 14-year-old boys died in the nearby Trask River. So the community considered it their responsibility to build a pool and to make sure that everyone learned how to swim. And so this place that started as a pool was run for years by the school district. And then 30 years ago, the district was going to shut it down, and the community organized and raised money to keep it going. So it started as just a pool in an elementary school. You know, it now offers education, arts, wellness, fitness, recreation. And they say that they used to have, they used to be really proud that 1,000 people a year would come through the doors. And now they have as many as 1,000 people a month. So this tiny, mighty community center really serves its population.
It's a very cool look into how these spaces kind of evolve with the community that they serve.
Yeah, and all the different roles that they play, all the different needs that they meet. This is like the community hub. This is where people come together. This is what strengthens their social fabric and allows them to lead happy, healthy lives. These hubs are really important.
If our listeners are interested in reading these pieces that we've talked about for themselves or anything else from Oregon Arts Watch, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can read all these stories at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Althea. I always love chatting.
That was Laura Grimes, the Executive Director of Oregon Arts Watch, speaking